walked out of college in 1995 and till date I'm an entrepreneur on my own. I've never worked for anybody else. We are available on the web, we are available on Android, we are available on iOS, from App Store to Play Store, everywhere our applications are available. Spend lakhs and lakhs, crores and crores in building a brand, positioning a logo, but at the end of the day, the customer has to trust.
If you have the idea which you strongly believe in and have the spirit of entrepreneurship thriving inside you, then trust me, this is the show totally for you. From the family of Reach Skyline, I welcome you to the very first episode of The Business Boss. And as I assured you before, today we are going to talk to one of the N2 entrepreneurs who is going to share a lot of insights from his entrepreneurial journey and a lot of tips to the budding entrepreneurs. So let us not wait and welcome the guest of the day, Mr. Uma Maheshwaran Dhananjayan, the CEO of BigFix.in, which is a device care platform that connects the people who wants to repair their devices with the expert technicians. Welcome, sir.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for the introduction and thanks for having me here in your show.
Yes, sir. I'm very glad that you are being the first speaker in this show, and I'm sure that we are going to have a great interaction with a lot of insights.
I'm honored.
Thank you, sir. So let's not delay and let me start with the questions. So for any entrepreneur, starting with the courage is a very crucial step. So how did you decide that BigFix is the one, that the idea that you're going to work on? So how did you all get started up, sir?
Yeah, I'll phrase this in two parts. One, okay. As me, myself. Okay.
Okay.
Now, for me, the journey has been quite good. It's been a long journey so far, actually for around 25 years now. I walked out of college in 1995 and till date I'm an entrepreneur on my own. I've never worked for anybody else.
Interesting.
So I had the courage way back in 1995 to start a company on my own, and I've been quite successful at it. For example, my first assignment or my first project was to set up a media streaming portal in the likes of Netflix and Amazon Prime today. Mm-hmm. I had set it up way back in 1995 itself. We called it Vanaville, and we were streaming audio, video content all over the world. So that was a huge success. It was a big hit all over the world. People started viewing our application and started consuming Tamil content. So that is where I started. So it was more as a fluke. We attempted something as friends and it paid off to the level that I was the official web partner for jeansfilm.com and stuff like that. Things which were just emerging then. So we were quite blessed until the dot-com era into 2000, we had a huge fan following. And then a lot of other issues crept up. So I decided to sell it off and I sold it for a handsome value. And from there onwards, I started using that money for other projects. So I became a serial entrepreneur from that point. From starting Vanaville.com to fast forward to BigFix. So maybe I will start talking more about BigFix as the part two of the conversation. I have Vanaville and a whole lot of other projects which I have achieved previously. Mm-hmm. And starting 2015, we decided we'll focus more on this project of ours, which is BigFix. Mm-hmm. So now, why BigFix, or what brought me into BigFix and all those things? Yes, we were already in this domain. I was working with MNC companies like Ingram Micro on their warranty management, return material authorization, a lot of things associated with device, and we had set up an online portal to sell gadgets. Again, these were pre Flipkart or Amazon days, where we started selling gadgets first. We called it Big Buy, and we were supported by Ingram Micro, who was one of the large Fortune 500 companies operating then out of Chennai. Stocks were with them, and we were running an online portal for them. And we were a big hit selling consumer devices and like laptops, desktops, and all other things to the mass audience then. Thereafter, I also got associated with Nokia. Nokia, we were one of the authorized service providers for Nokia phones. Mm-hmm. This is from a laptop era to a phones era, the transition. Initially, uh-huh. through Ingram Micro, we were selling devices. Mm-hmm. And then in the mobile era, we got associated with Nokia and we were into repairing mobile phones.
Services. Mm-hmm.
So it's from services, from sales mm-hmm. to service. Mm-hmm. So what Maruti is to automobile industry mm-hmm. is what Nokia to the mobile industry.
Mobile.
They were the front runners and they were the ones who set up the entire process, mm-hmm. the technology, things to do, what to do, what not to do, how to do. And every nuances of the businesses was learned from Nokia. Mm-hmm. And things were very good as long as we were associated with them. As always, every good thing has to come to an end.
Okay.
Nokia had to take an exit in 2012. Thereafter, we sensed an opportunity. We saw, when Nokia left, there was a big vacuum. So we thought we mm-hmm. could fill in that Nokia services space.
Okay.
So we tried to take it on ourselves and we set up a network of retail outlets all across the country to service mobile phones.
Okay.
These retail outlets were in the Nokia template. Nokia mm-hmm. Care template is what they call. Mm-hmm. We called it BigFix eCare centers.
Mm-hmm.
From being a Nokia repair center to a multi-brand repair center where any customer could walk in and get their phones repaired.
Repaired.
This is phase one of BigFix, which is more predominantly retail. We managed to set up a network of retail outlets through a franchise model all across the country, from Punjab, Amritsar, to Guwahati, to Patna, to Delhi, to all states, around 25 states we covered, mm-hmm. and we had quite a good footprint across the country catering to the mobile repair and service requirement.
Okay.
We have evolved mm-hmm. all along from being a mobile repair center to today a multi-category. And we have also gone from a franchise model to a marketplace mm-hmm. model. Maybe as we proceed into the discussion, I'll explain more on what BigFix does and how we do and all.
Sure, sir. So it's quite interesting to know that you, being a serial entrepreneur, have actually transitioned from one, complete product into sales, understanding actually, services, understanding the market needs. So talking about that, So during the initial transition, you said that initially you had this repair center and you decided to go for the platform. So how was the transition was like, and what are the challenges that you faced during the transition?
There are three types here. One is the retail outlet.
Hmm.
Then we have the online platform. Hmm. Then we became a marketplace.
Hmm.
Right.
Yes, sir.
So now, and then from sales to service also. We have made a migration primarily from sales to
services
also. Mm-hmm. So we felt the reason from sales to services, we felt anybody who buys a product would ultimately want to get them serviced as well.
Mm-hmm.
And in sales, the margins are wafer thin. Mm-hmm. You hardly get 1-2% margin when you are selling a product online. Depends on the product, but on a mobile, categories like mobile, the margins are very less. So on brainstorm, we realized it's better that we start focusing more on the services. That's why from sales to service, from big buy to big fix.
Big fix.
Okay. Now on the big fix activity, from retail to online, there's a transition from retail to online business. Retail, we had set up a network all across the country. But there was a great demand. Technology had changed. More and more people were taking, and anyway, it's mobile phone. A lot of products and tools and had already arrived. Accessibility, the connectivity had also improved. So we wanted to reach to the masses. And when we did, we took digital marketing as our method. And when you focus on digital marketing, your products have to become online. So from focusing on a retail perspective, when we started rolling out and when we wanted to reach to more and more audience, it became more sensible to take the online approach. So that's how the transitions have taken place from all these three phases.
So
challenges.
Uh-huh.
Shall I get into the challenges?
Sure,
when you run a repair center, There are primarily three challenges or a few challenges which I would like to put. One, you need to acquire a customer. You need to engage with them. So how do you acquire a customer is one of the primary challenges. Then you need to automate your business, professionalize your business and gain customers' goodwill. So that is something which is which was taught again by Nokia. We have learned that and we have tried to put it into use. Three, where will you get your spare parts from? And four, how will you train your workforce? Where will you acquire your workforce and how will you train your workforce? These were all challenges before a repair center. Right? Now, how do we solve it? Now, point one, to bring in a customer, we are running an online marketplace. We are available on the web, we are available on Android, we are available on iOS, from App Store to Play Store, everywhere our applications are available. Any customer, it could be a home customer or an office customer, could download our app and reach us through that. So anywhere in the country, we have given them a mechanism to reach our repair centers. So this marketplace is serving as a potential magnet to attract customers to repair centers. That is how we bring it. One. Two, now the customers have come in, they have walked into the center or they have reached the center. How do you automate the process? How do you professionalize? So we have developed a SaaS application, a software for repair centers. From the time a lead arrives to engaging with the customer, generating your job card, then going on your repair management, assigning it to a technician, and then generating your invoices, GST bill, your stock and inventory management, all of your point of sale equipments, all of this requires software. This was largely an unorganized sector. We have tried to organize it. We have tried to professionalize it. And we have created a SaaS application which any repair center could download and use it. So this is called for a lot of effort. And today, the repair and service industry uses our software. Like, for example, all accountants tend to use Tally. There's certain software which is domain specific. In this repair and service of gadgets, it's the Big Fix software which is order of the day today. So I'm happy there are around more than 1,500 partners using our software, and we aim to scale it to around 50,000 partners during this financial year. That's number two. Three, I was talking about spare parts. So we are running a portal, B2B portal for spare parts, where we procure and distribute it through our partner network and any repair for matter. If you have a phone and it has a problem, you are going to the repair center. Ultimately, you will have to get the screen changed or whatever is the problem. There has to be a spare part which has to be changed. So the customer goodwill is generated only when you use a quality spare part.
Definitely.
Customer delight is primarily on the quality of service which you extend. And that is largely determined by the spare part which we use. We made a lot of attempts to bring in the spare part, legitimize it. It's still the country right to repair has still not in place. The government is trying to do something. In automobile industry, you can always buy spare parts in the open market. But in the gadget industry, purchasing brand spare parts and all is still a challenge. We're trying to work with the government and we're trying to work with the industry also to make it possible to distribute electronic gadgets, spare parts here. So we ran a portal called Big Buy for that. So we are trying to address that as well. The last one is quality manpower. So we have taken it on ourselves to train the technicians. We are working with the government, National Skill Development Council. Through the National NSDC, we are working with TSSC, which is the Telecom Sector Skill Council. They have around 75 job roles for which training material is made. Now, for example, if it's a mobile repair technician, there are training material available through them and they also do the assessment. So every technician, we ensure that they undergo their training and also get themselves assessed and certified through a government body. Now, these technicians are ones who are deployed in our platform. So we ensure that the quality technicians are used here. So we call themselves, we call our technicians as verified and certified technicians.
Definitely.
So for example, if you are on a Uber, you are quite sure that the Uber driver is having an RTO license.
Yeah.
So you know he knows to drive.
Yes.
So similarly, in our platform, we want to give this assurance to our customers that all technicians here are trained and certified by the concerned regulatory authorities in the country.
That's
so
great.
These were the challenges faced, and this is how we have tried to overcome all of them.
It's really impressive to know that how you have actually standardized the process, because in order to sustain, you first have to standardize and then keep changing to adapt to the market needs. So
exactly.
Talking about that, right now you are being very successful, but looking back, so you talked about acquiring a customer, but before that the major task or even a fear for any entrepreneur is creating the brand for the product or the service that they are providing. So looking back at your olden days, so what are the challenges that you initially faced in creating a brand, you know, that recognition for your service? And I also heard that you are a startup mentor. So what do you think are the challenges or the mistakes that the budding entrepreneurs are actually making when they are trying to create a brand for their product or service?
Yeah, one thing to go to the point directly, you don't need to burn a lot of money to build a brand today. There are a lot of innovative tools available. Today's youngsters can handle all of that from your social media to your bloggers to YouTube. You just, all you need is a mobile phone to creating posters, to banners, to explainer videos and all other materials required can easily be achieved. So it is not what it was some time ago. 5 years back, to build a brand, you need to hire the specialists, you need to create logos, you need to pay somewhere around 2-2.5 lakhs to just to define the logo. Logo makers used
to
ask you as that. Today, there are so many apps. In a matter of minutes, you can get your own logo defined. Same when it comes to your photoshops or the creative people, designers. Lot of tools have come by which you can do them to very easily today. So I wouldn't want to go back on all those struggles of building the brand and all. What I would like to say is it's quite easy today, and you, any youngster can build their brand in no time. The customer goodwill is the criteria. You reach the message to the audience and you keep the recall value strong. And that can be achieved only by the customer delight or by the service which you have to offer or the product quality. If that is good, they are going to come back to you. If you are having a returning customer or the customer retention is good, the brand automatically gains its prominence.
Definitely.
So that is what we believed in. We definitely believed in entertaining the customer, retaining them, and repeat audience will automatically gain the business here. Now, when it comes to branding, the important factor for us was to carry the brand to the customer and to carry the brand to our partner. So, if you recall during the conversation, I mentioned that we have a franchise method of acquiring the partners. So, the partner primarily expects this from us, the branding, the identification of a store, to how long have the live, what should be the name board, and where do you position the name board, how do you position it, the glow signs, the indoor branding, the wall posters, the standees, the uniform, cap, shoes, glove, all of this we had to work, we built it, and we have provided this to the entire partner community of ours. It has been tested from vernacular languages. If you are in Punjab, I have to use Punjabi on all my branding communications. To Guwahati, where we have successfully done it using Assamese. So there we've learned our way also. What sells in Punjab may not sell in Guwahati. So those things have also been understood. And the brand has been positioned today. And we look forward to strengthening it further. And most of this is organic. Most of the brand positioning is based on goodwill. And then whatever paid marketing must be through some Google ads and Facebook ads, which is very little. I shouldn't say that I burnt a huge hole in my contact pocket doing this branding activity.
Okay, sir. Actually, when you conversed, the thing that I understood is that no matter what the time changes, customer is going to be the king. And goodwill and obviously customer delight are the keys to create the brand, a brand, and make it sustain in the world.
Yeah, you so, can spend lakhs and lakhs, crores and crores in building a brand, positioning a logo. But at the end of the day, the customer has to trust
customer.
You.
Customer, definitely.
Yeah, so without that, you are not going to travel anyway.
So, as of now, I'm going to ask you a very general question, which you might have come across in many platforms. The thing is, there are if you take any business, there is going to be a lot of challenges. So, for the entrepreneurs who are trying to be like you, like trying to get into the tech industry, especially in the shared economy, so what do you think are the challenges awaiting for them?
Wait. General, my two cents for the entrepreneurs who are coming in. One, don't rush it. Firstly, I would expect the newcomers to spend at least 2 years in a professional environment. Learn how business is done. A lot more than what meets your eye. So it's a tough world outside. So I don't want people to come in with an enthusiasm and then struggle later on or burn out. So it's very, very important that they learn the basic business sense. And that can be acquired by associating themselves with a professional organization, which follows the processes. And if they learn that for 2 years or so, it's not necessarily 2 years. It's how long and how quick they're able to learn that. And gain the confidence. So that is very essential for them. As an entrepreneur, I expect them to gain that field experience before they jump into it.
Definitely, sir.
The second part is on the finances. Finance is important. I'm not saying you need to raise huge funds. But whatever money you have, you should be able to budget it, plan it. And then based on your financial strength, you have to execute. There are lots. You have an entrepreneur, basically, even if he's a techie guy, 70 to 80% of his day will be spent on these activities only. Your banking, your managing your P&L, managing your employees, managing your investor, creating pitch decks. None of these are technical things. These are all your how you manage your business and how you manage your finances. Again, very, very essential. There are lots of quacks available outside who will come and misguide you. They'll say, I'll help you raise so much funds. You give me this, you give me that or not. So one should not be carried away or should not be dependent on third party to drive their businesses or finances. It's extremely important that they have these skill sets with them instead of depending on others to do this for them. There may be very few entrepreneurs who got lucky, who got mentored by good people. But lot of others, so-called mentors who are available outside only are there to make a quick money. So you should be able to read through and showcase yourself to appropriate people and then have the confidence to move forward. So that's something which I would also like to make a point. Two. Three is I see the entrepreneurs as two types from my engagements, wherever I've gone mentoring and on entrepreneur forums and stuff like that. I see two types of people. One is the first generation guy.
Okay.
Right? The first generation guy, it's definitely tough. He comes in most, and then if he's coming from tier two, tier three location, he's there in it for the first time. He's just getting his feet long. He's extremely confident. He knows what is the technology backing him, but unfortunately, he's not very confident about the finances and stuff like that. They tend to burn out quite quickly. They cannot face the realities. So one needs to be a bit more patient and do. The first generation people have to learn everything by themselves. Right?
Yes, sir.
So you will have to learn your knowledge yourselves and put them into play yourself. So it is a tough ask for them. While the second generation people, it is fed on to them. They have a good environment. Their family and finances are in place. There's good support. And they come from tier one locations mostly. They're taken care of. So one needs to understand this also. And from where you come, your background, your environment, all this also matters in picking the project and how you progress from there.
So, sir, yeah, from what you have said, I'm sure that those who are passionate about, you know, business, but who are confused, I'm sure they are going to get some, you know, confidence from what you have said. Because as you said, there are different types of entrepreneurs over there. And many reports suggest that not even, you know, 25% of the entrepreneurs are actually staying up till they, you know, cross the stage of a startup. So I'm sure the budding entrepreneurs would be listening to what you're saying. And coming back to the topic, now the pandemic is all over. Everybody is so much scared about it. How do you think this pandemic is going to, you know, impact the spirit of the entrepreneurship among the budding entrepreneurs? And what do you like to tell them?
Yeah, see, it's just the categories have changed. Earlier, the investors and VCs were banking on more tech-oriented projects, more aggregator-related projects. Mm-hmm. For example, if you look at the Olas or OYOs and all, they didn't have a single hotel, but they ultimately became the largest hotel company in terms of OYO, or the largest taxi owner in terms of Ola and all those things. So those were the order of the day where people were only wanting to move into marketplaces or aggregator, invest in projects like that. Mm-hmm. Now they have realized the physical projects are very important. So they are investing in that. And then a lot of, they have all realized agriculture is very important. So a lot of investments is going into agri-tech. Mm-hmm. A lot of investment is going into health tech. Mm-hmm. FinTech was always strong. So definitely the investor morale is very high. They still are on the lookout to identify projects and invest.
So they don't have to worry about the fundraising.
Definitely not. It's just that the categories have changed, the focus has changed, and it is for good. The actual physical businesses will have a good say from now onwards. The fashionable ones, the fancy ones are all out. If you are having a genuine good project, you definitely have value going on forward. And when you call the entrepreneurs, a lot of interesting projects have already started rolling out. And I think states like Gujarat or Tamil Nadu are front runners here. The youngsters are very, very enterprising. Quickly, in no time, you found a lot of COVID-19 related products coming in the sanitation. You get from dispensers to various other equipments have been launched primarily from Coimbatore area itself, and from your masks to all those products are also available today. We are next to China in manufacturing all these things and bringing it to the masses. So all this is happening, and in the agri-tech industry also we see a lot of revolution coming up, and agriculture. Are you there?
Ah, I saw. There was a sudden blackout.
Yeah. I think I'm on 4G. I guess you can edit it later as well.
Sure, sir.
Okay, so agri-tech is strengthening up. And other key areas also on the defense and all those things, low-cost equipments. Now with the privatization coming in by the government, they are encouraging colleges to come up with innovative products for defense and stuff like that. The governmental support is also going to be there. So I'm sure the startup community definitely is in safe hands. Even a few projects may not have its relevance, but 80% I still feel there is on safe hands. I'm quite optimistic about it.
Well, that's a relief to hear about it, sir. So, I just want to loosen up. I want to ask you about your source of resilience, because for any entrepreneurs, staying in the business, irrespective of all the changes or all the difficulties, is a big thing. And for to be a leader, especially, resiliency is something expected out of them. So, I would like to know what has been your source of resilience all through these years.
I really don't know. I've been there, seen it all. It's a long journey. I take it light and I try to give it back to the society. I don't, I only take things as learnings on some things which is hard, or if I failed on something, I take it as a stepping stone and move on. And a lot of strength also comes from the success which I've enjoyed. So that also keeps motivating me, and it's only the small kick which you get on being an entrepreneur, on being appreciated, on being welcome at various places keeps me driving. Mm-hmm. So it's more the pride which keeps me driving, and I guess that should be the motivating force for others as well. Not the money, but the pride, to be very honest. I'm not a big success when it comes to money, neither am I a failure there. But when it comes to pride, definitely, yes. I've been a poster boy in the 2000s developing these audio video streaming sites, and I was wanted everywhere around. And whenever there's something new to be implemented, that the industry reaches out to me. Any R&D or any new project, any new concept from back those days with HTML to JavaScript, today to Python, to Django, or to React Native, or to natural language processing, chatbots. It ultimately comes to me, and I'm very happy implementing all of those. So that's where it goes.
So it's very
clear. Hope I've answered your question there.
Yes, sir, I got the answer. So I'm sure this is going to be motivating for all the listeners also. So it's very clear that you have been a technical whiz right from your, you know, student days. And right from the start of the show, you have been so optimistic. And ever since I contacted you, I could feed only the optimism. I'm sure even the viewers are actually getting the spread of it. Thank you so much for being in the first episode of The Business Bossar. It's really happy to have such an you know, interesting interaction with you. Thank you, sir.
I'm extremely honored. I wish you guys all the best. Do well. You, and I guess you are also a startup now. I would like to see you emerge like this company called Your Story. You and there are quite a few other journals available. I would like to see you on the top of the stack very soon. All the best.
Thank you, sir.
And the team. Thank you.
Thank you so much, sir. From the team of Reach Skyline. And listeners, I'm sure that you would have enjoyed the whole interaction, and you have got a lot of insight, as I promised you before. And I'm sure that I'm going to meet you in a next episode with another interesting personality. So till then, let us keep learning and keep growing together. Thank you.
Reach Skyline. Embrace digital.